We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're theirs on the air. We're theirs on the air.
And welcome to Dad's on the Air for Tuesday, the 13th of January, 2009. My name's Phil from Dad's in Distress, and with me in the studio today we have Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning, Phil. Good morning, listeners.
And we have a really interesting show on today. We have a few things on to start off with. Of course, we will always start with the latest news. Coming up after the news, we have an interview that our own Peter Vandervoort has done on an American radio show called Get Off the Bench. And after that, we have also from the US, Mark Sutton from Liberal Arts Radio with an interview with Angelo Lobo about his film Support System Down. Liberal Arts is the radio show that explores the arts from an unapologetically political perspective. Most host Mark Sutton is joined by politically opinionated guests from around the world of music, art and political cartoon, film and more. So it looks like that'll be a really interesting interview. And what do we have on the news?
Well, Phil, this morning on the Sydney Morning Herald on the front page revealed why some foods are addictive. Louise Hall writes, cornflakes, biscuits and soft drinks may be as addictive as cigarettes and are in danger of facing advertising bans, strict regulations, high taxes and health warning labels, scientists say. New Zealand scientists reviewed evidence showing compulsive food consumption has similar underlying brain mechanisms that result in drug dependence and argue that heavily processed carbohydrates have the most potential to cause addiction. A Dr. Thornley from Auckland Regional Public Health Service said evidence showed people who binged on high-carb foods experienced symptoms of addiction, loss of control, a compulsion to keep taking higher amounts to get the same buzz, and suffered withdrawal if they went cold turkey, which kind of, to me, explains how come all these American fast food outlets that we won't be naming that produce disgusting fat-laden, sugar-filled products get kids hooked on them, which is why you should not allow your children to go to those places and eat that garbage. And, of course, soft drinks. We all know about soft drinks and the damage that they do to growing bodies. So this is all basically nutrition for children. Children should be, you know, I can't stress enough, children need fruit and vegetables as a staple part of their diet, and keep them out of McDonald's and Pizza Hut.
Very much so, very much so. And another little news item here in regards to children's health, nipper caps, cancer risk. The ironic red and gold cap worn by lifesavers is under attack by doctors who want it banned because it increases the risk of skin cancer. The Surf Lifesaving Nippers movement has been forced to defend the use of the swimming cap after skin cancer specialists criticised the organisation for failing to protect children against sun exposure.
Yeah, well, I don't think the cap actually causes exposure, but I think what they're saying is that they should have wide-brimmed hats on to shield their face and neck and upper body from sun. And also, I think a lot of those nippers contests, like for the older kids, they hold them in the middle of the day when the sun is at its most dangerous. My personal policy, I live at the beach with my 9-year-old son, is we don't go out in the sun between 11 and 3. Mm-hmm. And we don't use suntan lotion, because suntan lotion will not protect you from cancer. No, if you look at the label on all the suntan lotions, none of them claim to protect you from cancer. So what they actually do is they encourage you to stay out in the sun longer than is safe and expose yourself to cancerous rays. You don't get burnt. You don't realize the damage that's being done. Personally, like I say, don't go out between 11 and 3. And healthy-skinned people, if you condition your skin to tan naturally, you shouldn't need to use these suntan lotions. And I know that goes against the slip-slop-slap message of the Cancer Council, but, hey, I think they're just pushing sun care products more than they're worrying about people's health. That's my opinion.
Very interesting stuff. It goes along the lines of the mouthwash thing, which was in the paper also, where they say mouthwash could cause mouth cancer.
Yeah, well, the alcohol in it, apparently. But that's sort of, well, what about all the rest of the alcohol that we all drink all the time? I mean, that's a bit of a shock, actually, because I do use I use Listerine, being a bad breathed person. Listeners may be able to hear the quality of my breath. It's not great some days. And I have used these products. I'm going to stop, of course. We don't want oral cancer. I mean, how horrible, cancer of the tongue, cancer of the throat. Awful, you know, really, really bad situation. Hard to treat, and, you know, if you've got to get your lips cut off and stuff, really defacing. Not a good look at all.
No, not a good look. And just one last news story here. The child welfare is up for sale. Child welfare agencies have welcomed the chance to take over responsibility to foster care and early intervention programs previously run by the Department of Community Services. But department workers fear outsourcing the work to the non-government sector will put some children at risk of being forgotten. A long-awaited report into the New South Wales child protection system by a former Supreme Court Judge James Wood, which was handed down yesterday, recommends that the early intervention program's Brighter Futures, among others, be outsourced within 5 years. So I guess that'll take some of the pressure off docs, and hopefully, I don't know what they're going to do now.
Yeah, no, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Privatising, so people are going to be making a profit out of it instead of it being backed by the government. Somebody's going to be making their living off it. I mean, to me, these privatisation things, they go... I mean, look what happened with Telstra. You know, it's great at the time. The government made a motzer, but services have basically crashed exponentially.
But I guess if a private sector company falls over while they're trying to protect these children, at least the government can say, well, it wasn't us.
Yeah, that's true. But, I mean, look what's happened to ABC Learning, you know, and now they've got all these people, you know, who can't find childcare for their kids. So, you know, I personally don't think privatisation. We need government to do some things. You can't just privatise everything.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, we'll be back after this break.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bob Norton of Get Off the Bench with our co-host, Larry. Tonight we have a guest from Down Under, Peter Van Voorde, and we're going to talk about the consistencies in the amazing and destructive divorce system that are spread throughout the world in English law countries, and will be interesting to compare notes and see if we can understand how this corruption becomes instituted even under different governments and on different continents. Have you seen any cracks in the system? I know there's been a positive trend here in the United States over the past year. Things like Alec Baldwin making parental alienation a more well-known concept, and Stephen Baskerville has been doing a book tour here on his book, Taken into Custody, which is very credible and good speaker. You know, and I feel some cracks in the dam, and feel that there will be an acceleration of that. Are you seeing any real progress there?
Not really, Bob. I think it's the same. We get all that information too from Alec Baldwin and certainly Stephen Baskerville. We've had him on our program a couple of times, and he's an excellent speaker, and his book is fantastic. I'd recommend it. He's really articulated the issue very well. And Bob Geldof in England, you've probably seen the videos that he did on the family court there and how unjust.
Yes, I met him in Washington and spent some time with him and Matt O'Connor. Yep.
Yeah, and you think, boy, we're on our way now. You know, it's all going to happen because these people are speaking out, and it only lasts for a few moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing really comes from it. Not yet, anyway. I think it's accumulation. We're still accumulating all this information and putting it out there. But
we've always felt that we've got to change public opinion, which is a very hard thing to do, and we've got to have people understand that sole custody is child abuse, and that's been proven as a scientific fact. And so any parent that is fighting for sole custody is a child abuser, and any judge that is awarding the bulk of sole custody is a prolific child abuser. And if the public had that attitude, the system would go away from the shame that would go upon the alienating parents as well as the judges, you know.
I agree with you, but how do you do that? You know, that's the key issue, isn't it? I mean, there's so much information coming into us, and we're certainly broadcasting it, same as you guys, and occasionally it goes into the mass media, but it still doesn't grab the masses. Our legislators are drawn from an ignorant community, basically.
Yeah.
You know, while the community is ignorant, our legislators, by and large, remain ignorant as well. So unless we can change community perception somehow, then I can't see anything happening. I think my view is that we can't fight this parochially and in our own little towns or cities or even our own countries. I think we have to somehow become a global movement. And I've done a lot of interviews lately from people in Germany and Holland and Sweden and Czechoslovakia and Switzerland and that, and you get the same stories. It's exactly the same stories. And unless we can unite somehow globally, and I think potentially then we have multi-millions of people available to the cause, because not only is it the non-custodial parents, but we can also draw on all the other biological family members. If we have to find some, perhaps formulate a solution-based working group that can come up, because no matter how much we can put all this information to the public about the horrendous things that are happening, we have to find solutions. You know,
solutions are not that that hard. I mean, there are some very obvious solutions. Not that it would be nirvana to solve everything, but you know, I could make a list of 5 or 10 things that need to be done that would probably fix 80 or 90% of the problems.
Yeah, the solutions are quite obvious, like you say, but methods of getting that through. The Fathers for Justice. When I usually ask the people I interview, what do you see as the solution, and how do we go about that? And they usually don't have any idea. They don't have any thoughts on that. They say, well, just keep doing what we're doing and do what the Fathers for Justice do.
Fathers for Justice failed miserably, really. I mean, Matt O'Connor is a PR genius, and he created a tremendous brand and name recognition, but he didn't, in parallel, offer the way out for the government to have the solution, and I think that was a mistake. I think we need simultaneous pressure on public education and PR, which that type of activity does. But we also need legislative pressure and to some extent judicial pressure, although I think the judicial system has the most self-interest and will clearly fight the hardest to maintain the status quo, because, you know, in the U.S., I figure there's about $50 billion a year in legal fees around custody battles, and no matter how unethical it is, I like to say lawyers get an ethicsectomy in law school, but no matter how unethical it is and how many children they damage, they are going to defend that revenue stream to the hilt. And you see them doing it, and they're lawyers, and they know how to do it, and they take one case, and they try to make that case the laws based on that case, as the feminists have done, and then basically they use those laws for that extreme case on everybody. So they really have infiltrated the system so well and control it so well internally, both the feminists and the lawyers, that, you know, what's happening is amazing. You know, in our country, I mean, equality is supposed to be, you know, a top priority for everyone, and they've created such inequality, and yet they have this PR face that's okay, because, you know, we're doing it for the children, which of course is right out of Mein Kampf and Hitler's strategy. You know, make everyone believe it's for the children, and people will do anything you want.
It's actually kind of interesting that, you know, you broached that subject, Bob, is, you know, Milton Friedman actually said something interesting. The problem of social organization is how to set up an arrangement under which greed will do the least harm. Capitalism is that kind of system. You know, this isn't just a family court, you know, type system. And actually in Australia, Peter can probably talk more of this than I can, but the family court is actually being recommended to merge with another part of the court system there to cut out bureaucracy. But, you know, the chances of something like that happening, because it's going to cost jobs, is kind of, you know, slim, or they're going to figure out how to keep all the employees. But what we're dealing with is a government that is basically using social organization that is benefiting its profiteers. So the question becomes, how do we make this type of issue no longer profitable, you know, for bureaucracies and no longer profitable for government operations? I mean, it's not just family court. It's all aspects of how we're operating with social organization, and their greed is actually perpetuating this stuff. So how do we eliminate the greed so that our governments kind of start acting more in line with what they're supposed to be doing?
I think they're the sort of things we have to start looking at. How? What can we do? It's good to have well put together plans after it's the governments listen and after the legislators and the masses demanded. But how do we go about getting that initial attention? Yeah, you know, it's not, like the civil rights movement took many years, and suddenly Rosa Parks, I think it was, decided to remain seated on a bus, and it was as simple as that. That started it off, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, and here's another thing, and I'll turn this back over to Bob, is that in the Canberra Times in Australia, I thought I was a dead man. You know, I'll tell you something that got some attention is that the retired Australian family court judge was over in the Taj over in India. And, you know, when somebody busted down his door and held a gun to his face, you know, he was listening pretty good at that point in time, but it wasn't the terrorists. It was actually the soldiers clearing him from a room. You know, we need to make these people feel, I'm not advocating that we go shove some guns up in, you know, some politicians' faces, but we have to make them feel vulnerable and human, so that they'll act more human and they'll start to listen to us. And you can do that through compassion. You can do that through empathy. You can do that through embarrassment. You know, all sorts of things. And I think if we adjust how we're reporting on these issues and start to focus in on the disasters and rise these disasters up to the top, you know, we can use the same shock, you know, the same shock and awe type of reporting against them that they're using to pass all these laws and legislation. Peter, I want you to touch on the point that, you know, if we zero in on reporting on what the disasters are in these systems, let's say, for example, where your government is taking children and then the child, you know, ends up harmed or dead, you know, those type of reporting things, when you zero in on that, I think that that provides the shock necessary for minuscule reform, but it's still reform in a positive direction. I mean, what's being done in that area there in Australia?
Well, we do that on a weekly basis. We try and get those horror stories and that, and they've been doing that for 8-9 years. I've only been there for 3 years now, but
like us, Peter, you're probably preaching to the converted mostly, right? Because you know the people that tune in and listen. Yeah, you're not really hitting the masses.
And what you've got, I think the reason every action has by and large been unsuccessful so far is because we've continued to play our opponent's game on their turf, the way they wanted to play it. We fight them on their terms. We fight them by their rules of engagement. We challenge them by their institutions. We allow them to dictate every aspect of the engagement.
They define the language, you know, it's right out of George Orwell.
That's right. That we've allowed and permitted them to successfully divide us by gender, distance and language. We've allowed them to turn the victim, men, women and children, against each other. We've allowed them to become all-powerful, whereby the idea of overthrowing them would appear to be an insurmountable problem. But I think we have to start thinking outside of the box. You know, everyone's got a soft underbelly, if you like. And while we keep fighting them on their terms, we'll never win. And that's what I'm talking about, having some groups who can start looking at different ways, more innovative ways, perhaps, that haven't been thought of before. The Matt O'Connor's Fathers for Justice was a great thing while it lasted, but you know some of these things run their course. You can't keep using the same techniques. You've got to come up with new innovative ways. And if there is people out there that can do that, and some of us can perhaps join those sort of groups. I know there's one group that is international group that is working on these new innovative ideas to cut through. And
one of the big debates we have here is, and people debate this quite ferociously, is the system intentionally evil and doing this for its own profit, or are they just incompetent and ignorant of the damage they do? Government organizations, as well as any kind of monopoly, sometimes gets out of hand on its own and runs off the track because they don't listen to their customers and they don't have a feedback loop. And that's hotly debated, and of course I believe it's some of both, but I'd be really interested to explore, you know, your impressions of the system there and how that compares to what we have, because we know some of this is actually driven by genetics. According to Dr. Warren Farrell, men are programmed to protect women when the opposite isn't true, and so that creates a, you know, kind of a Darwinian pressure whereby male judges will, you know, feel like they're putting on the white hat and being heroes and saving the women when they're giving the women the children and giving the women all the assets and giving the women the child support and everything else. So, you know, maybe you could just paint a little picture of what the system is there.
Well, many of the things, Bob, are very similar, and it doesn't just apply to your country or my country. I think it's very much a global dilemma. And while we have had new laws come into place in 2006, the legislators were under a lot of pressure to award shared parenting, and our Prime Minister even gave the impression that that's what they were going to adopt. But what they came up with was an amendment to the bill, which was called the Equal Shared Parenting Responsibility Bill. Now, we already had parental responsibilities, but it didn't give equal parenting time. So many people regard it as basically a giant hoax that was played onto these unfortunate non-custodial parents.
And do you have a sense of how that happened? Was this a feminist-inspired thing? Was it the lawyers? Or was it a combination of the two, as we most often see here in the U.S.?
Well, I think one of the problems here is that the sophisticated brainwashing that's been inflicted on the unsuspected media, the public, the bureaucrats, and politicians alike. And apart from some tokenism, governments generally have chosen not to receive policy advice on family law matters from credible independent sources. They rather seek guidance from their own self-interested bias bureaucracies and senior advisors, or from the family law industry itself. No matter how accurate it may be, cautious and politically incorrect family law advice is not welcomed by governments in the Western democracies, nor is it widely reported. There are other reasons too. The so-called family law experts who dominate the debate do so in a self-serving manner, which has nothing to do with delivering justice and equality, but everything to do with maintaining the status quo. I can give you examples how this is worse. For instance, firstly, most government employees are gagged from making public comment on the contentious issues. Governments prefer to employ government agencies and making use of their own in-house public relations experts to craft carefully tailored manipulative press releases. Mm-hmm. Secondly, researchers are under intense pressure to conform to the prevailing paradigm of feminist propaganda and alarmism if they wish to receive funding for their research. Mm-hmm. Thirdly,
and does that happen, as it does in the U.S., through basically politicians treating this as kind of baby kissing, and by getting funding through feminist organizations for their election campaigns? How do the feminists wind up exerting pressure in the, I guess it's the parliament in Australia?
Well, I think it's crept in over time, and I think they basically drive the whole debate. Most of the funding goes to feminist, pro-feminist organisations and experts and research, and that's why they keep the whole thing going, because they have the funding, and it's important to keep this funding coming. The fatherhood movement gets very little funding, and unfortunately, in some cases, the governments play a really coy game. They give funding to a couple of fatherhood groups, and they then have a token involvement in the debate, but they have to basically follow a predetermined outcome put forward by the government. So if they don't go along with government policy, then their funding is withdrawn. So there's a couple of very suspect groups which are there, and they front it out to the media, but basically they're just yes men for the government, which is sad. But that's what happens sometimes, and that's not only in Australia. I think that's there's very little money handed out, and that these conditions come with it, that you basically have to go along with the government, or your funding's withdrawn.
Right. And do you know how many divorces there are, and what the population of Australia is, just to size it comparatively to what we have in the U.S. here?
Well, our population's just over 20 million, and there are about 1.2 million children from separated parents.
So when you include
another 312,000 approximately non-custodial parents, plus you have extended family members, say four to a family, you end up with another 1.5 million people. So about 10% of the population, at least, is affected by this. And about 700,000 of those children, within 2 years, see little or have no meaningful contact with their non-custodial parents and half of their family tree.
Sounds consistent with what's happening here. So I've heard figures, in the 60 to 70% area that says effectively, that number of usually fathers, of course, are pushed out of their kids' lives when, mom finds a new boyfriend.
Yeah, that's basically the same here. And there's plenty of opportunity for them to do so. As we know, parental alienation, false abuse allegations, they're all pretty much the same as because it's given to them on a platter, basically.
Right.
We firmly believe that there's core issues that we have to deal with. Unfortunately, many of us get locked into fighting the secondary issues, such as parental alienation and child support issues and false abuse allegations. If that's giving you the greatest pain, that's where you concentrate. But really, that's not the issue that's causing
that. That's a cause or a symptom of the root issues. I've always wanted to draw a map of an upside-down tree, and the root of that tree is a total lack of accountability of government and what I call corruptocracy, which is a natural phenomenon for the layers of government to do what's in their own best interest instead of be consistent with their true mission. And then, the branches start to be things like parental alienation and child support and domestic violence and all those kinds of things. But you can always trace all of these problems back to an incompetent judicial system, really.
Absolutely. I think there's three core issues that cause it, and maybe a little bit different in your country, because in most countries, I think your Bill of Rights covers it, but in most countries, we don't actually have parenting rights. Mm-hmm. Once you separate, you don't have the rights. So you can't really. It's ridiculous to go to court to fight for rights that you don't really have. But people think you have a right, mm-hmm. but we don't. We don't have a parenting right.
Peter, I do want to cover something here.
You don't have the advantage we have of the U.S. Constitution and the U.S. Supreme Court interpretations of that. That parental rights cannot be, limited or terminated without clear and convincing evidence. You've got nothing like that in Australian law. Huh? So basically, when the kids are born, they're yours. But as soon as you're divorced, they become property of the state, effectively.
Effectively, yes, exactly.
Don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child to support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses and the orders that you're given to court on enforce. A kangaroo court full of lawyers who know the tactic of the lay will make it go slow. This will drain all your money and cause your great distress. It will leave you exhausted and emotional mess. If you don't have the children, you don't stand a chance. Abuse of our kids, it will only enhance an industry of misery that does not make sense. Except to all those getting rich at our expense. Oh, don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child to support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses. Any orders that you've given, the court won't enforce. Whoever has the kids can do what they like. As an impotent court allows them this right. A failed institution claims to uphold the rights of our children. It's a joke that is told. It's not about justice, it's not about law. If you're without the kids, you've drawn a short straw. Those getting rich from our demise stand condemned. So don't feed the greedy. Instead, we recommend that you don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child to support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses. Any orders that you're given, the court won't enforce. Every lawyer tells you that you're gonna win the case. But if you haven't got the children, you're not in the race. Unless residential parents are made to comply. You wasted all your money and can kiss your kids goodbye. Any changes made through the family law will be totally useless when they're allowed to ignore. Compliance is the key, without this you've lost. You won't see the children at all at great cost. So don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child you support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses. Any order that you're given, the court won't enforce. So don't waste your money in the family court. There's no justice there for the child you support. Just don't be tempted to take these courses. Any orders that you're given, the court won't enforce. Hey man, don't worry.
about it. Be happy. Let's have another smoke, man. Don't worry. Be happy. That smoke. Oh, that smoke's so good, man.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
You have to have a constitutional amendment that says shared parenting or equal 50-50 time parenting, you know, is a constitutional right when either parent opts for it without clear and convincing evidence that a parent is dangerous to a child. I mean, not even unfit, but dangerous to a child, because, you know, the unfit is playing their game again. They define that any way they want, and, you know, they'll just redefine it, you know.
There's lots of there's many ex-judges and psychologists and so on that have been part of the system that are actually putting out publications that show the failings of the shared parenting type of agreements that when they do occur. So we're up against that as well. So you're always going to get reports of negative outcomes for shared parenting, but let me ask you guys, it's a statistical story.
I mean, that's a common tactic or strategy that the feminists and the system uses, is the anecdotal strategy. And, you know, you could always come up with a story to support any theory, but the question is, you know, what are the statistics? And you know, the statistics are very clearly in our favor, that you know, sole custody is damaging to children, and equal custody is enormously beneficial. Now, for most people, that's damn common sense. 86% of the voters here in Massachusetts voted for shared parenting rights, and the American system is supposed to be one of complete equality. So in that sense, they're not standing on very firm moral ground. But, you know, they have learned to duck and parry and cover it with domestic violence claims and with deadbeat dad claims and with all this other anecdotal stuff that is the tail wagging the dog, you know.
In Belgium, for 2 years now, they've had a shared parenting arrangements. Now, if we can put forward how successful that is, if it is successful, that would give some impetus to our own arguments, you know, for shared parenting. I think it's important to try and find those. I think Denmark might have something similar as well, but I know France and Belgium now have.
How many years has this been in place? Because it probably takes 4 or 5 years to get enough data on children to prove anything. But, of course, we have a tremendous amount of data already. You know, I'm sure you've heard of Dr. Warren Farrell in his book, Father and Child Reunion. Brought together 225 studies. I worked with him on that in putting together the video and the evidence kit that we're providing to hopefully force this down the throat of the system and the judges, that, you know, what they're doing has been scientifically proven harmful. What they're doing is making themselves highly prolific child abusers by assigning sole custody. And I hope and think they'll go down in history as that.
See, all the evidence is there, isn't it? It's just a, we basically have to find.
I don't think we suffer from a lack of evidence. I think we suffer from a lack of power and a lack of will of the system defending itself, because it's built so much inertia and mass and jobs and revenues that, you know, we as we said a little earlier, we've got to undermine the profit that maintains this system.
Yes, we've got to find some way where we can actually use a stick of some kind to make them sit up and take notice. At the moment, we go cap in hand to these institutions, and honestly, anybody going to a family court is probably doing themselves a great and their children a great disservice, because they're not going to get justice there, because you're not recognised to have any parenting rights, and only one of you will have custody, which is a winner-take-all situation. And the other parent and that side of the family tree is basically eliminated. If you don't go to court and you don't have orders, you have at least have an equal chance to get access to your kids.
Yeah.
You know, if you take your kids away or something, you're not being charged by kidnapping because there's no orders against you.
And do you have any movement there in mediation or what they call alternative dispute resolution?
Yes, what we have now, you can't just take your issue to court. You have to go to a mediation centre, and try and mediate your case before it goes to court, you are given or encouraged to come up with a parenting plan. But I just found out the other day, those parenting plans that people agree on don't have to be signed, and they don't get registered with anybody. There's no way that enforces those parenting plans. So most of them eventually will go back to the court anyway. And you get lawyers that recommend their female clients, for instance, to say, look, don't attend these mediations. Just tell them you're afraid of your ex-husband, that he's violent. And then you automatically go to court.
They're just like they are here, because when their client is a woman, they know they can win by just pretending that there's a high conflict divorce.
That's right, and that's the same here, and that's where they make look. Lawyers make money out of conflict. That they don't make money out of any peaceful resolution.
Right.
So you know, the system is really set up to fail, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Except there's so many ways that it's designed to do the worst. You know, if you made a list of what a good negotiator and mediator would do to resolve disputes, and then you reversed each one of those things completely, that would be the list that lawyers do.
Exactly.
You know, they cut off communications instead of the number one rule of mediation and arbitration being opening communications. You know, they want to make sure they control it. They build up paranoia. You know, they bait people with what they can get in terms of alimony and child support and all this other stuff. You know, so they basically run a playbook which is the exact opposite of what any good negotiator would do, because they want to cause the conflict.
And like I said, when I first started there, all our energies and resources are used up in fighting the secondary issues, because that makes money as well for all these different parts of the industry. It's hard to unite the movement because we're all fighting different parts of the issue.
Well, it's a perfect system for oppression, because what it does is it bankrupts you. It makes you broke. It holds your children as a lever or a weapon against you, in that, you know, people that step out of line, you know, they will take retribution against you, and they're going to take your children and give it to you worse, both financially and emotionally. And so, you know, it's a perfect system for oppression.
Look, it's either a human rights issue or it isn't. And if it isn't, then what are we doing here? And we all know it is a human rights issue. And maybe
it's a child's rights issue. I've always had problems with calling it a father's rights issue, because I think that fathers get the least empathy. They're expected to bite the bullet. And that's genetically programmed in all of us, and we're never going to change that in a million years. So, you know, we've really got to highlight the damage that this is doing to children more than anything. And in fact, I think it does a tremendous amount of damage to mothers. It's just that the damage to mothers is spread out over so much time, you know, and many of them are in denial about it. But, you know, 5-10 years down the line, they have a child that has all these symptoms. I'm seeing it with one of my friends now. You know, that the child is turning into a major, you know, behavioral problem. And it's very clear that it was caused by the imbalance in the parenting, that there wasn't a balance of male discipline, to you know, to use a stereotype, and female caring and that sort of thing that does create a healthy child. So it's very clear that this divorce process and system is destroying children and is driving, you know, gang violence and crime and drug usage and teen pregnancy and, you know, rape and all this other stuff, dropping out of high school. I mean, we've got the proof that that is exactly what is happening, and yet the system won't open its eyes to maintain its profit, which in my work, you know, in my view, is a crime against society and a crime against humanity. I mean, I think that these people, you know, should be going to jail for not correcting the system based on the new information that is available, because, you know, they're moving from ignorance into evil You know, as we get longer and longer into knowing how damaging this is to children. But, you know, I agree with you. We got to make it a human rights issue or a children's rights issue.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Bob. And look, it's no accident that so many of our children are acting out in anger at having been abandoned in a hostile environment by a society which forces them to have to deal alone with complex problems they can't possibly comprehend or resolve. Many of these vulnerable, unfortunate children are growing up with perverse views and opinions which are based on a distorted perception of reality forced upon them by a disturbed, dysfunctional adult.
Right.
These children, by and large, started out with a deep love for both of their parents, yet are forced to hate and turn their back on half of their biological families. We simply cannot continue to sweep this injustice aside, turn a blind right. eye to their plight, and deny them the dignity and support and protection that they are entitled to by virtue of existing international human rights conventions.
It's a hate crime. It's a hate crime against both children
yeah.
and fathers by the government establishment, as well as the you know, what I like to call the radical feminists, because I have no problem with feminism in terms of equality. But as soon as you cross that line of equality and start looking for the rights that women have today that greatly exceed the rights of men, you know, and this is only one example of that, you know, you're a radical feminist and you're not for equality, and I'll do anything to stop it, you know.
Yeah, look, the question has to be asked of the supporters of this travesty of justice as to just what part of the words justice and equality they have so much difficulty with.
Yep.
If we consider ourselves to be responsible members of a civil society, but continue to give up on these children, we've given up on our own deeply held values, abandoned our own identity, and discarded our own humanity. We need to seriously ask ourselves what principles of human decency we are still willing to uphold.
Yeah, that sounds very profound, and the broadest issue that we're dealing with, really, it's saving our children from a profiteering industry that basically has established itself and stolen. You know, it's a kidnapping and extortion racket. I mean, literally. I mean, you can put it down on paper, and you can write all the things that it does, and it is literally a kidnapping and extortion racket. They terminate your rights to your children illegally, so that they can have a custody battle that is going to generate money for lawyers, and so that they can start this revenue stream of child extortion flowing, you know, which forces the parent who had their rights terminated to send ransom money to the parent that kidnapped their children every week. It is a kidnapping and extortion racket, literally.
Yes, look, this travesty of justice, it's really morally indefensible and therefore is degrading all of us. You know, we must ask ourselves, are we as a community now so blind, ignorant and uncaring that we no longer even comprehend how it would feel if it happened to us? Do we not realize that if we continue to passively accept this evil amongst us without protesting against it, then we're in effect cooperating with the perpetrators and really are as guilty as they are.
Yeah.
You know, we as a united, civilized international community should no longer stand by while we watch separating parents being dispossessed of their children and property by a dictatorial family law industry and its mercenaries who are profiteering, like you said, from their inhumane treatment of separating parents and who are impervious to the deep pain and anguish that they're inflicting on these families for the sake of profit. But the answer lies with us, the ordinary, decent and honourable people, you know, to join together in order to bring about change. And
yeah,
there's many millions of us, caring men and women located around the world who are absolutely appalled at what is taking place in our society. And they watch with horror at the way the family law industry and their mercenaries have taken control of our lives and imposed their social engineering experiments on our society by forcibly destroying the parent-child relationships, which are so important to and form the very structure of our culture.
Oh, really well stated, Peter. I mean, very articulate summary of what's going on. And, you know, of course, the problem we have is the truth is unbelievable to the average person that hasn't been exposed to it. And I think one of the reasons we haven't succeeded is, you know, not only people who are, you know, not affected by it don't believe it and don't have motivation to do it, but those who are affected are disbelieved because the truth is so horrifying, and no one expects that a government would have the ability to do this. So they choose to disbelieve the individual instead of believe the truth, which is that, you know, essentially what we have is a kidnapping and extortion racket by government to make enormous amounts of money off of forcing one parent out of the lives of children.
You know, just tell two people every day. And, you know, I want to make sure that Peter has an opportunity to give us his URLs so that we can link all those up and make sure that, you know, this stuff is, you know, sent out everywhere. Go ahead.
Look, I'd like to thank you very much for having us on the program. And I'd like to invite you guys both onto Dad's on the Air as well, which for your listeners, if they want to access that, is www.dadsontheair.net. And there's a whole archive of material there if you'd like to have a look around. Once again, thank you so much. It's refreshing to hear how much knowledge you have of the issue. And I hope that your listeners will be invigorated and stimulated by all this information. And hopefully we can make a bit of a difference.
You know, if people knew what was going on, they would be appalled. We've got to educate the people that this is essentially a scam for government and lawyers that is literally destroying America from the children up.
And I just want to thank Peter for joining us from dadsontheair.net. Please check out their website. Again, that's www.dadsontheair.net. And, you know, check out some of the programming there as well.
Grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress. 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
This week on Dad's on the Air, we're going to bring you an excellent interview by a guy called Mark Sutton from the US. Mark hosts a radio program called Liberal Arts Radio. Liberal Arts explores the arts from an unapologetically political perspective. Mark, whose radio credits include National Public Radio, Air America and XM Satellite Radio, is regularly joined by politically opinionated guests from the world of music, art, political cartoons, film and more. You can find out more about Liberal Arts Radio on their website, which is liberalartsradio.com. The family court system is on trial this week in Angelo Lobo's documentary film Support System Down. The film looks at ways in which people have been trapped in divorce proceedings that can last for years, cost into the millions of dollars, and separate parents from kids. It focuses on the issues facing non-custodial parents within the family court system, such as excessive child support payments and unenforced visitation, that lead to depression, debt, imprisonment, and even suicide. Here's part one of Mark's interview with filmmaker Angelo Lobo.
Okay, we're going to speak now with filmmaker Angelo Lobo. His film is called Support System Down. It's a documentary about the child support system here in the United States. Take a listen to the trailer.
It's billions of dollars. It's far beyond anything the mafia ever did.
I've been called a liar, a loser, a deadbeat, a sperm donor.
They came and took my kids. I went to jail.
The child support system can be so detrimental that it causes death.
I love them unconditionally, and I didn't really believe what they were saying about me.
Where are these people all getting these money from? I mean, are they just milking the dads dry now? Is that what it is?
Still can't believe what you're seeing, what you're hearing. Your mother thought you knew the whole story until your mama took it on Maury. Read your test results.
I'm in New York City today with filmmaker Angelo Lobo. His movie is Support System Down. The website is supportthemovie.com. He has a couple of screenings here in New York as part of his presentations around the country about this really important film. I think it's really groundbreaking, especially in the subject matter that it covers. There's never been a film about this. So, Angelo, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here.
And I'd like to know, first of all, for people who don't know anything about the film, Support System Down, what does that title mean?
It just means, you know, we started off with the custody issues and the divorce issues in America. And we found that, you know, what does really support mean? And what we did is add a question mark at the end of support. And, you know, time went on, we found that, you know, the system was just down and it was broken. And the more people we talked to, we figured that this needed to be, you know, heard, you know.
So the movie is about the child support system here in the United States and just how people get stuck in the system and can't get out.
They just can't get out. Yes, it is. It's a documented film about the detrimental effects of the family law court system in America, and usually that always ends up being child support and divorce issues.
I saw the film yesterday here in New York. It was a real pleasure to see the film. It was at times difficult to watch the film when you see people really struggling in their lives. You see some people who are just really on the edge of everything. You can tell there's some very emotional moments in it. And I'm wondering for you, first of all, the film starts out with a really dramatic courthouse shooting in Texas.
Stay down.
I was wondering if you could tell me about how you came across that footage and what was going on there.
Basically, we at the time that we started the movie, one day I just turned on the television and there was, you know, a massive shooting in Texas, and it had to do with child support. So we kind of followed through with that and obtained the footage, and we started from there of like, okay, what really made this man, you know, just walk into a courthouse one day and just start killing people? So what I did, I said, well, let me buy a camera. I bought a camera and I went out in front of the courthouse. And that's when I started just hearing these stories, and they all sounded pretty much the same. It was like, you know, I'm not being heard. I feel like my rights are being violated, and I can't see my child. And so that's where it all began.
There is no harsher sanction than to be separated from your children.
Children should never be asked who they love more.
Whoever gets there first is the one with the better hand.
My name is Eduardo Vallejo.
And we ain't even about that, it's just about the kids.
My wife is Cielo Vallejo. My ex-daughter-in-law separated from my son. She has been able to get the courts to rule in her favor so that my beautiful grandchildren cannot come to America to see their grandparents.
We miss so much of them.
I'm living out of the bus. I sold my house. I decided that I'm going to change the world. It's about the children, and the children need both parents in their lives.
I cry at nights because I know there's nothing that could be done about anything. If you have money, people listen to you. If you don't have the money, the court system really sucks.
The laws have been skewed for too long.
Justice delayed is justice denied.
$250 in the red a week.
We're talking about thousands and thousands of dollars.
Parental suicide does go up 5 times for fifth parents that are removed from their children.
It's destroyed me financially.
They know they can grind you down.
Physically and mentally.
The system's not built to put the family back together.
And you can't stop. You can't just sit down and say, I don't want to play anymore.
Okay, I'm back with Angelo Lobel. His film is Support System Down. The website is supportthemovie.com. So let me ask you this. Do you see this as a men's issue, or do you see this as just a system issue? Are you just really focused kind of on this one issue and not looking larger to men's rights or progressive politics?
You know, I've always tried to keep a balance in the film, because I've seen it happen to women. But majority of the non-custodial parents are men. You know, 90% of the interviews we have are men, and it is a serious issue for men, because men are disenfranchised more than the women are. You know, they go to court. Obviously, they're not going to put the woman in jail because mom has to feed the child. You know, we have to take care of the women, the children. But I think that, you know, men are they're like whipping posts in the courtroom. They have no voice. They're not being heard. They're the highest rates ever in America with domestic violence. You know, it's a checklist when you get to the courthouse. It's like, you know, do you have a job? Do you have where are you getting paid? And that's about it.
So they're basically, the complaint I've heard is that they feel like they're just Wallace. They just walk in there and they're not treated as people. And there's another one of my favorite scenes from your film is when you did manage to get legally a camera into a family courtroom, and there's a gentleman who is, you know, being assessed how much he's supposed to pay. And I believe they say he's supposed to pay $600 per month. And he says, well, I only have $500 right now. I cannot pay this. You're putting me immediately in arrears. And the distinction in the way that the man was treated and the way that the woman was treated in that scene, I thought, to me, just encapsulated what is wrong with the system. You know, you have a woman, she's being asked, oh, do you have my personal number from the court? Like, if you have any problems, call us. And then they immediately turn to the man and talk down to him like he's a 5-year-old and just pay money. Just pay money and maybe you won't go to jail. Just pay as much as you can and maybe we won't throw you in jail.
Mark, I'm so glad you caught that. You know, that to me was like probably the best footage, because it shows the triangle of, you know, the district attorney, the mom, and then the judge. And that is what is happening across the country. That is the way that they're handling these cases. It's not, you know, it's black and white to them. They don't know the children. They don't know what the relationship is between dad and son. They're just looking by numbers and black and white. And if you can't pay that amount, but you brought up a good point. He's already in arrearage now. He's got $100 that he is going to have to owe to the state. Or to the
and DSS. He'll never catch up.
He'll never catch up, because now they're going to add interest on top of that. They're going to add late fees. So the next thing you know, he's got probably $800 a month now.
Every county in America and every state in America is financially incentivized to ruin families.
He is my only son.
I release you from jail today. Where will you go?
There's always been some form of child support. The child support we're talking about now is relatively new.
There's a crisis now that's been recognized by social scientists as being the most detrimental crisis we face.
We need to have a system which takes divorce primarily out of the court.
When you're standing there in front of the judge, you kind of feel like a criminal.
It's the nurturing. It's the caring for. It's the understanding. It's the being there. These are your children.
And we'll be back with more of Mark Sutton's interview with filmmaker Angelo Lobo after this short break.
Stress, meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1-300-853-437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air, where we're listening to Mark Sutton from Liberal Arts Radio in the US, talking to filmmaker Angelo Lobo about his new film, Support System Down. Here's part two of the interview.
We have to talk about this right now.
Yes, I think that right now actually is the perfect time to talk about this, because I want our friends to benefit from the wisdom of my experience. Right now, everything is great. Everyone is happy, everyone is in love, and that's wonderful. But you gotta know that sooner or later, you're gonna be screaming at each other about who's gonna get this dish. This $8 dish will cost you $1,000 in phone calls to the legal firm of That's Mine, This Is Yours.
Harry.
Please. Jess, Marie, do me a favor for your own good. Put your name in your books right now before they get mixed up and you don't know whose is whose. Because someday, believe it or not, you'll go 15 rounds over who's gonna get this coffee table. This stupid wagon wheel Roy Rogers garage sale coffee table.
I thought you liked it.
I was being nice.
All right, that was, of course, the infamous wagon wheel coffee table scene from When Harry Met Sally. Great film. And it's good that they can put a little humor into a very serious topic. The film that we're talking about today is a little more on the serious side. It's a documentary by Angelo Lobo. It's a great film. Here's a little bit more from Support System Down.
No relationship with the child, not my child, don't know the child. I've still been called a liar, a loser, a deadbeat, a sperm donor.
It must be nice, you know, getting a paycheck for having a child. And I'm like, you just don't get it.
We've been trying all the other options for 30 years. That's clearly leading to a disaster.
What it does is it puts a bounty on the children's heads.
You may not be able to contact the mother in my situation. We both have no contact orders. So who do you contact?
Okay, there was one gentleman in the film who I thought this was another one of the moments of the film I thought was very powerful. And this was a guy, he is an engineer. He designs MRI systems. And I was wondering how you met him, where you met him, and just tell our listeners what happened.
I believe you're talking about the gentleman in Albany, New York. When we interviewed him, that was probably, like I think you sensed last night in the movie, one of the gut-wrenching interviews. That gentleman, I had to pull him out of the men's room after the interview because he was so devastated. He has lost everything that he has ever had in his life. And all he knows how to do is design equipment and design things that help people, save lives. And you heard his statement in the movie. He just was blindsided by all of this. He just never knew that something like this could happen to him. And, you know, I still touch base with someone that's close to him. I get emails, you know, but it just affects you for the rest of your life. But I think that the way that they're attacking the non-custodial parents today in the family court is just wrong. People that are finding themselves owing 15 times the amount when they don't have that stated, it's just incredible. And I think what people will find in the film that this is really happening every day. And I think when they notice that the people that it's happening to is just, you know, average people. It's happening to everyone out there that just has a child and wants to take care of their child.
Now, a lot of people listening are going to think, I think their first reaction to this is, well, they have twofold. One, what did the guy do? I think there's a presumption of guilt that if the father is not allowed to see the kid, it must be because he was abusing the child, and therefore he shouldn't see the kid. And the other thing is, well, the father should just get a lawyer, and if the father had a good lawyer, then everything would be fine and the paperwork would be done right. He's just not dotting his I's and crossing his T's. I think those are the common reactions. Well, it doesn't work that way. This must be a strange case where the guy screwed up. How would you react to that?
That's what you hear all the time. It's his fault. Or this guy must, you know, they see the name and they'll say, well, this guy's a lawyer. This guy's a doctor. He can afford it. You know, but when you go to court, the person that gets a lawyer, it seems like the judges are just not following the policies. They're not following the laws. That's the problem. And unfortunately, some of them are tainted. Some of them are just not going by the book. You know, you see more fathers' rights groups coming up and making sure that they walk into a courtroom and sit down with an interested party to make sure that they get a fair trial. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, there's kind of hardly any advice you can give somebody that's going through it, and it's kind of sad that
but,
way.
But, I mean, are a lot of these guys, quote-unquote, bad apples? I mean, are these guys, are there people who this happens to, people who really should not be around their kids?
I don't think that. I think a small percentage, I think the system was designed for a small percentage of men and women that are out there that don't want to be involved. And yes, that there is a small percentage, unfortunately. But I think that now the system has gone so awry, it's like you there's no control about it.
How is it that these low-income guys, who don't even have steady work in many cases, are capable of owing this much money in child support? Isn't there a problem with the system?
The court said I could contact her parents. Well, her parents didn't want to speak to me.
The proportion of people who have children who recognize the demands that are going to be made upon them financially, emotionally, and physically, very, very small. One of the primary reasons people wind up being divorced.
Well, you can deal with my ex-husband. He happens to be in the law enforcement industry.
And I proved to them that I was actually paying as much as I could when I was employed, and that I had actually paid 75% of my obligation for the past year. That was totally immaterial. I was jailed. I was put in handcuffs.
You figure that there's a system out there trying to help you out, but they ain't trying to help you out.
I just think that there needs to be more rights for fathers.
The intelligent thing we can say about men and women in America is we need each other.
I'm Mark Sutton. You're listening to Liberal Arts. We're here today with filmmaker Angelo Lobo. His film is called Support System Down. You know, really, when you see this film, you see that opening scene, and you see, you know, you hear the gunshots in the family court in Texas, and these people are getting killed, and then you see all these cycles that people get through in these systems, where, you know, they're being ordered to pay a lot of money. They don't have any legal representation. They get their license removed, their driver's license removed. They might even get thrown in jail just for not being able to make enough money. And then you start to understand what could drive. And they have their kids removed from their lives. And they're told their kids are being brainwashed to tell them that their fathers are horrible people. And you start to add all that up. And then you say, well, this is how a normal person could be pushed over the edge.
And they just snap. And it's like, it's not only the driver's licenses. It's the bank accounts. They freeze the bank accounts. They freeze your stock accounts. They freeze anything that they have that has your name and Social Security number on it. They intercept your tax refunds. They do anything and everything to make sure that the money is taken. And that's what's just driving people over the edge. And what the American public doesn't understand is that the U.S. taxpayers fund this. You know, the U.S. taxpayers fund this because they're giving money for the incarcerations, all of the driver's licenses being pulled. The majority of them are found with errors. They don't owe the money that they owed. You know, so you can get your driver's license pulled, and when you get to court, say, hey, I paid that last week. You know, why am I here? Well, it shows on the statement that you didn't pay. So I think that the public needs to be aware, and I think we need to just start working from the inside out and just see what we can do to correct it. And if you know, some people say the politicians aren't going to get behind this. You know, some people say that the, you know, legislators don't want to touch it. Child support's been put on a pedestal, and you know, it's like, well, we don't want to go there. And that's why I appreciate your time in coming to the movie and having me here today, because I get to talk about this wonderful project that could save lives. This thing is serious. People are dying. I get suicide notes through our email address. I get guys that are in holding.
People, wait, let me get this straight. You have people who they somehow find your website, but they're men. Have you gotten any from women, or is it mostly men?
I get emails from both sides. I can show you emails from women that say, you know, please bring the film to Minnesota. Please bring the film to Nashville. Please bring the film to Florida. My husband is going through it. My brother is going through it. I'm going through it. And then the men, I've intervened on 3 suicides already. I have
what?
I have an email that I'll show you right now. This gentleman was 60 years old, has never been in trouble with the law, paid up to date every dime. 13 years, his daughter was just emancipated a while ago. There was $13,000 that was said that he owed. He went to court. The judge says, no, you don't owe this. When he walked out, the attorney said, I'm going to get you. One way or the other, I'll get you. Here it is, 13 years later, I believe. They brought it back as a civil trial. He called me the other day. Look, I'm about to kill myself. I can't understand why this is happening to me. He has so much in arrearage. He has so much in back pay. He's like, my daughter doesn't even need child support anymore, and they're bringing me back to court.
Why does this happen? I don't understand what kind of person would take somebody back to court. I mean, does this happen?
It's the system that is flawed, and they are allowing it because there is government incentive on the arrearage. There's money being made, and they are not caring. And this guy texts me from the holding tank before he goes into the trial. Before he goes in, he's like, I'm here with a murderer. I'm here with a rapist. I have not done anything wrong. I have taken care. I have the receipts. I have the bills. Why am I here? What is happening to me? You know what? All I could tell the guy through a text, I said, please try to meditate, try to be there, and just do the best you can.
Get through it.
And get through it. There's nothing else I could tell him. But I think we really need to look at the family as a whole and say, you know, the stresses of living is very hard to maintain a life that we can give to our children every day. You know, we want the best. We want the best for everyone. We want to be able to give our kids the best schools, the best education. And that sometimes is so hard. And when we start beating up human beings for trying, for being the best that they can, and we start taking their bank accounts and start taking their driver's licenses and making them feel like the little person every single time, you know, we're destroying this country. You know, I feel very strongly about education because I really didn't have an education. I look at things differently today. But this movie has opened my eyes to say, you know, what are we doing to the next generation? What's going to happen to my grandkids when they're 21? You know, are we going to be suffering like this? You know, what is it that we have to do to make these changes? And I think if we're going to step up, we're going to have to look at everyone as a whole and be on the same page, both men and women, and say, you know what? When this kid's 5 years old, he needs options. He doesn't have to go to the family courthouse and get thrown in jail for failure to pay child support, which he couldn't afford anyways, or it was an error that they made. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about $488 million in undistributed collected funds. That's money that they've collected and has never reached the children. You know, those are the things that you'll see in the film. It's like, what? What's happening?
Okay, Angelo, thanks for being with us. There's so many issues. We could talk about this all day, but unfortunately we're out of time. But I want to thank you for being with me here today on Liberal Arts. We've been speaking with Angelo Lobo, filmmaker from Los Angeles. His film is called Support System Down, supportthemovie.com. Angelo, thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me, and I really appreciate your time.
And many thanks to Mark Sutton from Liberal Arts Radio in the U.S. for allowing us to use his material on Dad's on the Air today. Once again, the website is liberalartsradio.com.
Friends in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1-300-853-437 or dadsindistress.asn.au. We're back with Dads on
the Air. And that's another show for this week. I've got to say, I really like those interviews.
Yeah, they were pretty. They were very powerful, especially the one with the movie that Greg put together. Well, good job there, Greg Andresen, our researcher. He's doing fantastic work for men and fathers and families and children and everybody, really.
Indeed, mate. And I think Peter was very succinct with what he said in his interview as well. So, oh, mate, good on you, Pete.
He didn't pull his punches. Our rock and pop Peter Vandervoort, no, that was very powerful as well. I think the main point that you can glean from all of this is that a society's greatest resource is its menfolk, and societies seem to be turning on their greatest resource. You know, men are suicide rates are up, men's health is down, men seem to be copping it from, you know, pretty much every direction these days. And it's really, in terms of a civilization, this is not the way to go. It's not going to do us any lasting good as a society.
No, that's right, mate. You know, and you know, you can look at the homelessness, you can look at you know, drug abuse, the rest of it. You know, it seems to be all happening to men, you know, and it's because I think we're being devalued in society.
Yeah, and a lot of the homelessness and the drug addictions and all those problems come from fatherlessness, come from people who don't have a father, a good solid male role model in their lives. And they go off the rails. They go astray. This is a tragedy.
Yep, and with this family law just continuing to be the way it is, I guess the next generation will tell a very sad, sorry story.
Well, let's hope not. Let's hope all our works are doing some good. Anyway, you can hear this program on our website, dadsontheair.net. It should be up by tomorrow or sometime fairly soon. And we'll be back next week.
See you then.